Welcome to Core Online. If we haven't met before, my name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at Core, and we are so incredibly excited that you have chosen to join us as we embark on part three of this series that we are calling You're Not the Boss of Me. And throughout this series, we are talking all about this one concept. How can we possibly say no to the emotions in our lives that compete for control? Because every single one of us have an emotion or two that constantly finds a way to slide into the driver's seat of our lives. An emotion or two that seems to be under control, that seems to be lying dormant in our lives until that one circumstance pops up. And it causes the guilt to rise back to the surface. It causes the fear to rise back to the surface. It causes the anger or the insecurity to rise back to the surface in our lives. And in those moments, we know that those emotions have begun to take back control because they cause us to do things we know we shouldn't do, and yet we just can't help it. You see, what I'm willing to bet about you and what I know about me is that we have had far too many moments in our lives where one of these thoughts have run through our minds. Maybe for you, the thought goes something like this. I don't know why I said that. We've encountered moments with our spouse where they asked us how they looked in that outfit, and we came out with the full truth, and a minute later we knew, why did I say that to them? I just caused a fight. I just caused 24 hours of strife because I said something I knew I shouldn't say. Or maybe for you, the thought that's crossed through your mind more than once is this. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I reacted in that way. I don't know why I exploded in that moment. But now here I am just a few minutes later, and I'm filled with regret, and I'm a little bit embarrassed, and I'm wondering deep down inside of me, man, where did that even come from? But when we look close enough, what we'll realize is this. We know where it came from. You see, when we look close enough, what we realize is that it came from our heart. Those emotions, those words, those actions, they didn't just appear out of thin air. They bubbled up from within inside of us. They were lying inside of our hearts. They were things that were already in us, and that one circumstance revealed something that for far too long we had done a really good job of covering up with our actions. We had done a really good job of hiding it, but you just can't hide it forever. And Jesus has something to say about the power of what's going on inside of us. The power that those emotions, when they slide into the driver's seat of our lives, the power they have to wreak havoc in our lives, the power they have to wreak havoc in our relationships, the power they have to wreak havoc in our workplaces, that our lives are drastically affected by what's living in our hearts. And this passage is one that we are coming back to every single week of this series. We find it in Matthew's account of the life of this man named Jesus. And if you haven't done so already, this is a perfect opportunity for you to grab that weekly that we sent you in the mail to pull the notes page out of there. Maybe for you to click on the icon below this video and pull the notes page up on your screen. Or maybe if neither of those are your style, just to wait for every passage, every fill in the blank to slide across the screen for you. But here is what Jesus says about the power of what happens in our hearts, inside of us, and the power it has to do things that we don't want to have happen in our lives. We pick this up in Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 17. Jesus says this, "Anything you eat passes through the stomach and then goes into the sewer." Here, Jesus is responding to the Pharisees and their complaint against the disciples that they aren't going through the necessary ritual of washing your hands so that you are clean when you eat. And so because they are putting dirt into their mouth when they eat their food, somehow that defiles them. It sets them apart from a pure relationship with God. And Jesus is saying, don't you realize that just because you eat something, what goes into your mouth, it's just coming out the other end. That's not what's most important. That's not what actually makes your life worse. What makes your life worse is this. But the words you speak come from the heart. That's what defiles you. What's living in your heart are the things that put you at odds with God and put you at odds with other people. For from the heart come evil thoughts. Living inside of you are these thoughts, these emotions. And from every single one of those thoughts, those emotions, come these things: murder and adultery and all sexual immorality and theft and lying and slander. These are the things that defile you. What's inside of you matters. And what Jesus is pointing out here is this incredible truth. Is that every mistake of my life, every regret that I have encountered was derived from one single thought that started in my heart. Every regret is the result of your emotion that you allowed to slide back into the driver's seat and slowly gain control. But what if I told you it's possible? It's possible to regain control and to begin to live a better life, to begin to monitor our hearts in such a way every single day that our lives, our marriages, our parenting can be better from this day forward. But in order for that to happen, here's what we have to do. We have to recognize where those emotions originated from, and then we have to figure out what steps must I take to push them out of the driver's seat in my life. To be able to look at those emotions and exclaim with my words and my actions, you are not the boss of me. Now, growing up, I'm going to date myself here. Growing up, I would consider myself to be in the first target audience of social media. As a senior in high school, there was a social media platform released called MySpace. And some of you all experienced this incredible social media platform. At least I thought it was so incredibly innovative. It allowed you to personalize your own social media page. And so when someone hopped onto your page, you could personalize your background. And they saw your favorite sports team as your background or your favorite band as your background. And then it also allowed you to customize your page in such a way that when someone hopped onto your page, they would hear your favorite song playing. And then a year later, as a freshman in college, there was this startup social media platform that I don't even know if it's relevant or viable anymore, this little social media thing called like the Facebook or something like that, that popped up and it began to explode. And from that moment forward, now MySpace has faded away, but Facebook exploded and we saw social media platform after social media platform drive onto the scene and begin to change our lives as Twitter came and exploded and Instagram came and exploded. And from that day in every single one of our lives, in your life and in my life, it began to reveal something. You see, for me, as I scroll through my news feed and through people's pages on Facebook, as you do that on Twitter or Instagram, what I slowly recognize about myself is this, is that as I see other people's pictures and I see other people's highlight reels displayed before me, it begins to cause me to play the comparison game. When I see the picture of their happy family, it puts me in a position where I want to ensure that my family looks just a little bit happier than theirs. When I see the picture of their new toy, I have to ensure that my new toy has one more upgrade than what theirs came equipped with. It's the reason that filters have exploded onto the scene. Because if we can put a filter on my picture, then maybe it can make me look a little bit better. Or better yet, maybe it can make me look better than everybody else. And for me, social media has become this constant reminder in my life that there is no win in comparison. I mean, when you really look close enough, wouldn't you admit that to be true? That in your life, when you enter into the comparison game, the comparison trap, there is never a winning situation in that. There is no win in comparison. Comparison always gives way to envy and jealousy in my life and in my heart. And today, as we move through this emotion of envy that fights for control in our lives, I'm going to expose some things in my life and in my heart, some dark places that for some of us, as you listen to these dark places in my heart, are going to give you some solace. Because you're going to realize that you struggle in those exact same ways. And it's going to allow you to see that we are all in this together and that we can begin to move forward. For others of you, it's going to make you question, why in the world did they let this guy become a pastor? With all of his broken, with all of the darkness that's living down deep inside of him. And maybe that's the very reason that they hired me, because they realized that this dude was messed up and this dude was broken. And maybe when he gets up there and speaks every single week and reveals the darkness of his own heart, it will make us all feel just a little bit better about where we stand. But even so, I don't care. If it helps us move forward, I want you to know that I struggle with envy and jealousy, fighting for the driver's seat in my life, that this emotion just keeps coming back to the surface. And what I've recognized about myself is that there is this occurrence in my life that I absolutely despise of, that happens time and time again. And I notice this occurrence taking place in this one moment, the moment where I see other people's failures. This occurrence happens the moment where I see other people slip up. And in those moments where I come across other people's failures, other people's slip-ups, whether I see them happen or I hear them through the grapevine, there is this small voice inside of Ben Carver that when I see other people's failures and I see other people's slip-ups, says, yes. Because for some reason, their failures and their slip-ups make me feel better about myself. Make me feel better about my own failures and my own slip-ups. And somewhere along the way in my brokenness, I've bought into the lie that if they get pushed down, somehow it elevates me. Somehow in their failures, it's slowly elevating me to their level, or maybe it's allowing me to pass them by and to be looked at as better than them so that I can look at myself and feel like I am better than them. And when I see that rising up inside of me, there's this thought that crosses my mind. Ben, how can your heart be so petty? And yet, even as I realize that time and time again, I still hear that small voice inside of me saying yes. It still happens to me over and over again. And this jealousy and envy to be just a little bit better than them, no matter the cost to them, ends up destroying me. In fact, King Solomon, one of the wisest men to ever walk on this earth, gives us this insight that when we allow envy to take that place in our hearts, it will destroy us. Check out what he says in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 30. He says this, plain and simple, envy rots the bones. When envy is just allowed to sit inside of us and have control with that really small voice that no one else even has to know is there, that no one else ever hears about you, that no one else ever sees how dark you are inside. But when that small voice gains control, it will rot you from the inside out. But how do we move forward, Ben? How do we take back control and push envy and jealousy out of the driver's seat? You see, first, what we must realize is this. We must realize, in order to move forward, we must come to grips with this fact that we are all broken. As humanity, we are all broken people. And because we are broken, envy and jealousy aren't going anywhere. They will always be an issue in our lives. Because your social media feed will be there tomorrow, reminding you of what other people have that you don't have. Your neighbor's new toy will still be sitting in their driveway this afternoon. There will be constant reminders around you of the things in which other people have that you don't have. And so this thing called envy and jealousy, it's not going away. But in order for us to move forward, what we must realize and come to grips with is this. Envy is not a problem to solve. It is a constant tension to be managed. There's no magical three-step process that allows you to eradicate envy and jealousy from your life once and for all. To get better in this area of our life, what it requires is an acknowledgement that every single day we must wake up and manage this tension to the best of our ability. That every single day we have to wake up, look envy in the eye, and say, today, envy, you will not be the boss of me. I know you're still there. I know you're still prowling around. I know you still want to get the best of me, but today I am going to make choices that prove you will not slip back into the driver's seat of my life. And Solomon, the same guy who talks about the power of envy inside of us and how it can rot us from the inside out, he gives us a solution on how to manage the tension of envy well, of how to see it from the right perspective in order to not give it control in our lives. And we see this in a passage that Solomon writes in the book of Ecclesiastes. Starting in chapter 4, verse 4, Solomon writes this, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." It's like right off the bat, Solomon drops the hammer. He says, here, I want you to know what I see happening over and over. Time and time again, I've seen people in their pursuit for more money, more recognition, a better title, a bigger bank account. And every time I see that pursuit of more, it is usually driven by competition. It is usually driven by comparison. It is driven by envy and jealousy, by wanting what someone else has or wanting more than what someone else has. And what you must know is that this pursuit of more is like chasing the wind, because there will never be a finish line to that. You will never find peace in that pursuit of more, because what you will find is you'll never have enough, because there will always be an in your life. Newer, bigger, smarter, better, richer. And in that pursuit of the envy will always stamp a guarantee on your life. When you keep pursuing the envy will always come with a dissatisfaction guaranteed. You will never find yourself satisfied. Envy will always leave you in this place where there will always be someone or something more to envy, someone or something more to chase after and live up to, someone a little higher up, something a little nicer than the thing you just got. But Solomon stops in his tracks, and he says, while I understand this pursuit of more can lead you down a dangerous path, what I also want you to realize is that the far other end of the spectrum can be just as dangerous. And so let's acknowledge that for a moment. He continues by saying this, "Fools fold their hands and ruin themselves." It's not about becoming lazy. It's not about not working at all. That's just as detrimental to your life. But what it is about is finding this perfect, happy medium. And he lays out what that perfect, happy medium to push envy out of your life looks like. He continues this way. "Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind." That word tranquility is one that we don't use very often in this day and age, but it simply means this. It simply means contentment or peace. And here, Solomon is laying down this gauntlet in your life and in my life that we need to see the stuff that we have through this perspective. It is better to have one handful of stuff in your life and to know that's all I need, and to find contentment and to find peace and to find rest in knowing I've got what I need. I know it's just one handful, but that is all I need, and I can find tranquility in that place than to chase after two handfuls of stuff. And to realize once you have two handfuls that it still isn't enough, and that you still need more, and that you are still chasing after the wind, and you are still grabbing after the third handful, even though you don't have a third hand to hold it. You see, what Solomon is laying out is this: less is more when it leads to contentment. One handful is actually more than two when you can be content with the one handful. Isn't that so incredible? And so the question that remains is this: what in your life makes you feel less than? What are the things in your life that are leading to envy? And whatever it is that comes to your mind, the things that trigger envy, the things that trigger jealousy in your life, what would it look like to just get rid of those things? To take a break from it. To stop logging in. To cancel the subscription. To unsubscribe. To just stop it, knowing that it is causing rot inside of you. That it's wreaking havoc in your life, because every time you go there, every time you look at that, you want something you weren't designed to have. And it's causing a level of dissatisfaction, discontentment that you're tired of living with. But Solomon doesn't stop there. He continues this way in verse 7. I observed yet another example of something meaningless under the sun. This is the case of a man who is all alone, without a child or a brother, yet who works hard to gain as much wealth as he can. But then he asks himself this, and this is such an incredible question. It's a question that has the power to change your life and change my life if we stop for a second and are willing to just ask this exact same question. Who am I working for? Who am I doing all of this for? For those of us who are men watching this right now, our initial response to that question is this: well, I'm doing all of this for my family. Really? So you're going to tell me that your kids are there every morning waiting by the back door with your briefcase in hand, chanting, make more money, buy more stuff, spend more hours at work so we can have another toy. We want less of your time and more of your stuff. That's not what happens, is it? For some of us, we find ourselves chasing more in pursuit of living up to what we think our parents want for us. We find ourselves chasing more to prove our father-in-law wrong. We find ourselves chasing more because of that teacher that told us we would never amount to anything in our lives. And too often in our lives, we envy the approval of someone who isn't even there to see it. Solomon doesn't stop with that question. He continues with this one. Why am I giving up so much pleasure now? In this pursuit of more, why am I destroying my life right now? It is all so meaningless and depressing. Solomon says this is the death spiral that leads towards depression. When you keep striving for more, driven by something inside of you that is constantly comparing, constantly competing, and in turn constantly envious of what everyone else is doing and what everyone else has. And it's like Solomon is saying, whoa, hold up just a second. What you have to realize is this, is that you will never be what you were created to be. You'll never be who you were created to be as long as you're looking over your shoulder at what everyone else is becoming. You'll never experience God's purpose for your life while distracted by God's purpose for somebody else. Y'all okay? Did you catch that? You will never fully experience God's purpose for your life while you're distracted by God's purpose for somebody else. I warned you this morning we weren't going to get into the dark parts of my heart. What you need to know is that as the leader of this church, oftentimes, the way in which I see envy and jealousy and this comparison trap rising up in my life and my role in a position of lead pastor is this. I have a tendency to compare our progress and our size and our impact to every other church. And there's this desire deep down in me that wants us to be better, that wants us to be bigger, that wants us to be growing faster, that wants the way in which we do services to be more excellent than everybody else. And it just keeps creeping up, and it just keeps fighting for control. And we live in a day and age, at least over the course of the last 10 weeks, where Ben Carver has instant access to what every other church in this city, in this county, in this state, in this country is doing, because everybody's producing their content online. And so I can go through any church and see what they're putting out there. And it's this constant draw to compare what we're doing. Is it better? Is it worse? Is it making more of an impact than what everybody else is? And I'll never forget this moment a month ago when we had just finished up Easter services and we finally had a moment to exhale. I found myself in this place where it's really difficult for me on Sunday mornings to listen to myself talk through our online services. And so what we have tended to do is we sit together as a family during worship, and then Daddy takes the two boys into the other room and we turn on Disney so that Mommy can focus on just the message, because Daddy is not that interesting to a 2- and a 3-year-old to listen to for 40 minutes. And so in that, I've had to find another way to be fed. And my wife knew that. But on this particular day, what she also knew about me, she knows the darkness of my heart, unfortunately. And what she knew about me is there was going to be this draw to go looking at what everybody else did on Easter. And my wife on that Sunday looked me in the eye and she said, "Ben, here's what I want you to do. I want you to find one church, someone that you look up to, someone that you respect. And I want you to just watch that one service for you to be fed. Because Ben, what I know about you is you're going to start looking at everybody else's Easter services. And it's either going to make you feel worse about what we've done, or it's going to make you feel prideful about what we've done. And that just isn't healthy. And you just can't live that way." And on that day, it was hard to hear that, and it was hard to live that out. I wanted to check out what everybody else was doing. I wanted to see how we measured up. But what my wife understood was this: Ben, when envy enters into the control seat, it will rot you from the inside out. And that's not healthy for your life. It's not healthy for our marriage. It's not healthy for your parenting. You need to find a way to let that go. You see, too often we find ourselves competing for something we were never meant to have. What that church has, God has a different and better blessing in store for us. What your father-in-law has, God has a different and better blessing for your life and, frankly, for your marriage to his daughter than what he had for him. What your father had, and yet he chased after it his entire life and he never found himself content. And yet you're chasing and striving for the same thing. Why? God has a different and better blessing for your life. You see, I left something off of that verse that I read from Solomon at the very beginning. He doesn't just say envy rots the bones. He gives us the other side of the story too. There's a first part to Proverbs chapter 14, verse 30. Solomon writes this: "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. A heart that can find contentment gives life, but envy rots the bones." You see, if you've drifted, come back for a second. Because I believe with all of my heart, there are too many of us this morning that need to hear this message. God has given you a race to run that is only your race. God has given you a lane to run in that is only your lane. What would it look like for you to stay in your lane and change the world from there? If you've ever run a race before, you know that you have been coached on this one technique. Don't look behind you at where all the other racers are. Don't look to the lanes beside you, because that only slows you down. It keeps you from being the best racer possible. And you see, the same is true in this race called life. In order for us to be the best version of ourselves, it's about comparing us to who we were yesterday, not who everyone else is today. Count your blessings, not everybody else's. What would it look like for us to get rid of the comparison game in our lives and realize that Ben Carver will never experience life to the full until he focuses on the life that is in front of him?
You will never experience life to the full until you focus on the life that is in front of you. We have to be willing to look envy in the eye and say, envy, today you are not the boss of me. And let me prove it to you. Let me prove it to you with my actions. Today I'm going to write a letter to that woman who everything that she has accomplished has driven me crazy, has made me jealous and angry at that woman for years and years and years. And I'm going to tell her about how great those things actually are in her life. I'm going to celebrate the things in other people's lives that they have that I don't have. You want me to finish with some darkness? For the last 8 years of my life, there has been this one place where it has been so ridiculously difficult to push envy out of the driver's seat. See, for the last 8 years of my marriage, Krista and I reached this point about 8 years ago where we began to try to have kids. And as month after month and year after year passed, we kept realizing that it's just not happening for us. And why is it not happening? Why aren't we getting the desires of our hearts? One of the most difficult things for me to encounter was baby announcement after baby announcement, was gender reveal after gender reveal, was baby shower after baby shower. Because it felt like time after time there was just this salt being rubbed in the wounds of my life. And I found myself not being able to be happy for people who were experiencing that joy in my in their life. But over the course of the last couple of years, I found myself in this place where I had to realize that envy isn't a problem to be solved. It's a tension to be managed. And the way in which I manage that tension is today I'm waking up and I'm finding myself looking envy in the eye and saying, today you're not the boss of me, that I'm going to celebrate with people who have things that I don't have, even though I want it, even though I desire it. I can still be happy for them, even though I am not getting it. You see, all of us have a place like that in our lives. We have to be willing to look at envy and make the conscious choice. I'm not allowing you to be the boss of me. Envy, you are not the boss of me. And frankly, as a Christ follower, I already have a boss. And this is what he instructs me to. Check this out. This is so good. In John chapter 13, Jesus says this. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. They will know that you are my disciples when they look at you and compare you to everyone else. And they find you are better. It's not what he says. He says, they will know you are my disciples by how you love. And envy and jealousy will never allow you to love the way that I've called you to love. It's like Jesus is looking at you and I on this morning. And he's saying, this is the moment to stop competing. This is the moment to stop comparing. Because there is no win in comparison. This is the moment to start loving the way I have called you to love. And the way you do that is this. Celebrate others when they go through moments of their life, even the moments you wish you had. That is how you look envy in the eye and you say, you are not the boss of me. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, I look at my own heart and my own life. And what I see is moment after moment where envy just keeps fighting for control. Moment after moment where I've allowed envy and jealousy because of comparison to slide back into the driver's seat. I've allowed that small voice inside of me that says yes to other people's failures to rise up far too many times. that I've held back from really celebrating people's milestone moments and the incredible things that are happening in their life because I'm upset it's not happening in mine. And God, frankly, this morning, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of that rotting my bones from the inside. I want something better. I want to see that chasing what everybody else has isn't what you've called me to. You have a different and better blessing in store for my life. But I will never recognize that. I will never recognize and live out your calling for my life while I'm constantly distracted by everybody else's. So God, this morning, for every single one of us, when the envy and the jealousy rises up and we want to give in to the comparison game, God, I pray that this morning we have the courage and the strength to look back at envy and to say, today, you are not the boss of me. And that we will realize it's not a problem to be solved, it's a tension to be managed. And that means tomorrow, I need to wake up and say the same thing. And the day after that, I need to wake up and say the same thing. And the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that. Envy, you are not the boss of me. We thank you for your help in doing that. It's in your name we pray. Amen. You see, this morning, as we finish, I want to pose this question to you. And I want to challenge you that at some point over the course of the next 6 days, that you ask this question to yourself. That you ask this question between you and your spouse as you're riding in the car together. Are you competing internally with someone? To seriously ask that question, is there someone internally that you are competing with, that you are constantly comparing yourself with? And as you find the answer to that question, may this be the week, may this be the moment in your life where you finally say, I'm tired of comparing, I'm tired of being in this competition, I'm ready to move forward with running in the lane that God has given me to run in and changing the world from that lane. And what I promise you is this, is when we take the steps to push envy out of the driver's seat, God has something incredible in store for you, and he has something incredible in store for me. Lastly, I want to finish with this. Man, again, we are so incredibly thankful that you have chosen to join us. But we want to challenge you to this. Next week, as we continue on in this series, we're going to be talking about the emotion of anger in our lives that so often pops up out of nowhere and how we can push that out of the driver's seat. And so next week is a week that you do not want to miss. We hope to see you soon. We hope things are going great. We hope that you continue to say, you are not the boss of me.